This is Morgan Michael, welcoming you to Kindsight 101, the podcast, where you'll hear from world-renowned educational leaders about the mobilizing power of kindness, together by challenging our assumptions and venturing beyond the status quo in education. We can make a big impact, one small act at a time.
It is the small things that we do that make a difference, and we don't always see the difference that we make. And I think that that's the hardest part. We oftentimes question, do we really matter? Are we really making a difference? Everybody asks that themselves that question. If you're here and you have air in your lungs and you're breathing, that means that there's something that you're meant to bring into this world that nobody else can.
Orly Waba is an educator, entrepreneur, and activist who is passionate about inspiring people to embrace the power of kindness. She began her career as a middle school teacher in Brooklyn. For 15 years, has worked with youth and local charities. Waba is known for incorporating kindness, love, and respect into curricula. She founded Life Vest Inside in 2011 and is the writer and director of Kindness Boomerang, an inspiring video about kindness with more than 100 million views, the author of the book Kindness Boomerang, and is a multiple TED speaker. She's incredible. She's also the founder of Dance for Kindness and is actually developing a kindness curriculum to practice. In this episode, we discuss the difference between healthy and unhealthy giving, and we also discuss how to support anyone struggling with depression from a teacher or parent standpoint. We explore the origin story of Life Vest Inside, how the creation of her video came about, and so many practical stories and approaches to highlighting the power of kindness. You can find out more about Orly and her work at lifevestinside.com, danceforkindness.com, Project Hope Exchange, or by searching Kindness Boomerang. I hope you're as inspired by this conversation as I was. I got chills so many times throughout our conversation. Orly Waba, what an incredible honor to have you here on Kindsight 101. I have been waiting for this for a year. I'm so excited to have you on as a guest.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for the opportunity, and I really applaud all the work that you're doing. I think it's spectacular.
Thank you. I'd like to start with an element that you shared on your TED Talk about the fact that since you were 4 years old, you wanted to change the world for the better, to affect positive change in the world. Tell me about the drive that you had at that time to make your positive mark on the world. And a little later, I'd like to delve into some of the different projects that you're doing to do that.
Sure, of course. So yeah, it's true. I was always called the four-year-old dreamer ever since I was a little kid, and I remember it really well. My dad, a lot of my inspiration comes from my dad, not to say that a lot of my inspiration doesn't come from my mom, but my dad, he too is a very big dreamer. When I say that the word dreamer in the best way of the word is to believe in things that some people believe are impossible and to never lose sight of those dreams and to know that you can do anything as long as you set your mind to it. And so every night when he put me into bed and he tucked me in, and I come from a Jewish family, and so faith is a really big, important part of my life. And so I would have my sort of like dialogues with God. I know it sounds funny, but as a four-year-old kid, it's exactly what I did. And it's something I did all the way into adulthood. And I always felt as this young kid, and my dad would ask me, so what do you want to accomplish? What do you want to achieve? I always felt that there was something I was meant to do in my life, to bring people together in this world. And I didn't understand why animosity existed between people of different backgrounds or different religions or different faiths, people that thought differently or looked differently. And it hurt me. I felt that pain. And the truth is, I feel that pain till today. When I see something that is not so great going on in the world, I feel it. I really internalize it. And it reminds me of that same exact feeling when I was a child. And I believed very much that I was meant to do something to bring the world together. I didn't know how. I didn't know what. But I believe that I was meant to do that. And there were a lot of different things that I think led to a lot of the inspiration behind why I felt so strongly. A lot of it had, like I said, had to do with my family and upbringing. Faith was a very big part of it. Even small things like music I was listening to or movies I was watching. I know it sounds really funny, but they really do influence you. And I always clinged to people that were speaking about world peace and connection and empowerment and kindness and love. And that exactly, that was my dream. That was my dream. And I believed it with all my heart. And unfortunately, you know, I was sometimes poked fun of because of it. But it was this idealist, like, oh, you know, you're so naive. You're so naive. You know, when you're an adult, even talking about changing the world, people look at you like you're absolutely crazy. But I always made that promise to myself to never lose that innocence of childhood, to never lose that wonder and that excitement that anything is possible as long as you put your heart into it and you believe that it can happen and that you can be a part of the solution.
I love that. And I think there's something really powerful as an educator myself in passing that message along in a really real way to students as well. And I know that you told this story a while back about the fact that people have the power to move mountains. Can you talk about the boy that moved mountains?
Yeah. So basically the story is as follows. There was a king in a kingdom. And in this kingdom, there was a huge, huge mountain. And he made a proclamation. He said, whoever can move this mountain from point A to point B is going to receive 1 million gold coins. So naturally, everybody in town, everyone in the city was signing up to move this mountain. You know, big guys, strong guys, people were working out and lifting weights and training for this momentous occasion that they're going to move this mountain. And one after the other, day after day, week after week, month after month, people were coming to try and to push this mountain, to move it from point A to point B. And one day, this little boy, short little boy, walks up to the mountain and just stands there. He stands there and he looks at it. And everyone is standing around watching. What does this boy think he's going to do? And the longer he stood there, the more cynical people became and the more they started throwing just, you know, negative words at him. Like, what do you think you're doing, kid? Do you think that you can move this mountain? Don't you see us? We're big, strong, tough men. You think you're going to move this mountain? And he didn't listen to their words. He just stood there. He stood there all day and all week and all month. And people just kept wondering, what is this kid going to do? And finally, he puts his hand into his pocket and he pulls out a small little shovel from his pocket. And he puts it into the dirt, into the mountain. And he picks it up and he walks on over to that second point, point B, and he puts down the dirt and he goes back and forth and back and forth. And he did this all day and he did this all week and he did this all month. But at the end of the day, that mountain moved from point A to point B. And I think that this idea is a very, very important one that we all need to cling to. Because we all have our mountains. We all have the things that we want to accomplish, the dreams that we've dreamt or maybe are sometimes afraid to dream. And it's because people around us, sometimes the people that are closest to us, sometimes our own family, people can discourage us from actually pursuing that dream, from thinking that we can become something more than what we might be. And the real message is that, see, anyone that tells you that you can't do something, it's just an indication that they don't believe that they can. If someone doesn't believe in themselves, how in the world, how could they possibly believe in you? How could they do it? It's just not possible. The whole idea is if we empower people to believe enough in themselves, anything is possible. So regardless if people are going to come your way that are going to try and discourage you, the most important encouragement can come from within you. And if you take things one step at a time, one shovel full at a time, even though it seems like a little, you can move any mountain that you want to. It's not going to come with the snap of a finger, but it comes with understanding your why and connecting to your heart of what you want to do and the legacy that you want to leave in this world.
Oh, I love that. And I think we really need to hear that more and more these days. I think kids need to hear that. I think adults need to hear that. I think we need to know not only that we matter, but that in order to make the change that's important in the world, we need to take these incremental, persistent, tenacious steps toward the goals. And I love the story for illustrating that. So thank you.
Thank you. Of course, 100%. You know, it is the small things that we do that make a difference. And we don't always see the difference that we make. And I think that that's the hardest part. Because when you just take that small shovel full, it looks like it's so little. When you just do that small, it looks like it's so little. So we oftentimes question, do we really matter? Are we really making a difference? Everybody asks themselves that question. There's no one in this world free from asking themselves that question. Anybody tells you otherwise is lying to you.
Yes.
I ask myself that question until today. No matter how much a person has a sense of self-value and confidence, everyone doubts. And that's okay to doubt. It's okay to wonder and to question. But just remember and know that there are no extra people in this world. There's no, oh, oops, there's an extra person in this world. If you're here and you have air in your lungs and you're breathing, that means that there's something that you're meant to bring into this world that nobody else can. You are a piece of the puzzle, just as important as every other piece.
When you were 15, as much as you had been this very positive, generous, dreaming soul, you were hit with some real adversity in your life. You had a fire, and you fell into what really can only be described as a deep depression. I'd love to hear a little bit more about what that time was like for you, and then also perhaps through the lens of someone who has come through adversity and has a perspective on how do you rise up again when you've gone through something so difficult like that. What advice you might give to somebody who's in a place of darkness themselves right now?
This is a really rough time, especially being 15. You know, as a teenager, we're trying to figure out who we are amidst everybody telling us who we should be. And I loved people. I was always a very positive person. But in my beginning of my adolescent years, I was also super shy. And I had very, 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 very low confidence. And there's reasons behind how that came about and how that came into fruition. But going into the fire, the very beginning of my sophomore year, having the fire, I tried being that positive me in the very beginning and trying to hide the feelings that I felt. You know, the fire wasn't just the physical things that it took. Thank God my family and I were all okay physically. It was more the memories that you couldn't necessarily embrace and the feeling that you felt that some part of you, some part of your life has been erased and been taken from you. And so I tried being really positive in the beginning. I remember even making jokes about it the next day. I came into school, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, guys, my house burnt down. And I was trying to be really strong. And the reason for that is I'll never forget the next morning when my parents came back and I saw their face. They didn't know that I saw them, but I saw how destroyed they were. And when you see your parents break down, people that you look up to that are your safety net, and you see them break down, it does something to you that I really don't know how to describe, but I think I knew in that moment I needed to be strong. I couldn't let my emotions show. I only realized now that was wrong, but I kept my feelings hidden from my family. I kept them hidden from my friends. You know, I tried speaking about it in the beginning and talking to my friends about it, but when you share something really traumatic with a friend, especially when they're also in their own, you know, they have their own situations going on, they didn't know what to say to me. So oftentimes, you know, when someone's going through something rough, we tend to change the topic because we don't know what to say.
Yes, because really, it's uncomfortable.
The truth is sometimes it's uncomfortable. Yeah, if like somebody, for example, somebody passes away, people don't know what to say. Sometimes really it's not about saying anything. It's sometimes just being there. So my friends would just change the subject. And so I'm like, okay, another people I have to hide my emotions from. And so I continue to hide these emotions more and more, but you can't really do that for very long until, you know, one day I'll never forget. I went to sleep. It was right after I got back from a seminar with the school. Went to bed one night and I sort of just didn't wake up the next morning. I like fell into this state of sleep, this really dark depression. I wasn't in school for several months and I didn't want to go back to school. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I mean, everyone in school thought, oh, that I had mono or something. But the truth of the matter was I fell into a very, very dark depression. And I wouldn't talk to anybody. I would be sleeping most of the day, crying the rest of it. I refused to share my feelings with my family, you know, crying alone in the corners, not wanting to drop out of school altogether. It came to the point where I was dark to the point of suicidal dark. I stopped believing that there was a reason for me to be here. A big part of that was, you know, like you mentioned, I love people, always did. Even though I was very shy, you know, if you were a kid absent from school, if I knew you didn't know you or you're in my group or not in my group, I would take notes for you and bring them to you the next day. I did really love people. I was home for several months and not one person called. Oh. Not one person came to visit. And it really took a stab at me in a way I really don't know how to describe it. It made me feel invisible. It did a lot more damage than the fire did, actually.
Wow.
And I felt like, you know, well, if I wasn't here tomorrow, would anybody even care? I mean, would it even matter? And I felt like the answer was no. I just didn't want, I had, feeling like I could change the world. I didn't even feel like I deserved to belong in this world. And so I wanted it all to just end. I really did. And I was angry. I was angry at the world, angry at my family, my friends. I was angry at God. I was just angry.
Yeah.
And the truth is, it was faith that got me through. That's the honest truth. I was forced to go back to school after a couple of months, but I wasn't the same kid. I was, you know, that loner kid in the corner. You know, I didn't care about school anymore. And I was very studious before that. I didn't want to hear what anybody had to say. I was just in my own world, you know, wearing all dark, like black, and I didn't have any reason to smile. And one not so special morning, I woke up and I was washing up to go to school. And I was looking at myself in the mirror. I'll never forget that. I was really looking at myself in the mirror. And the scary thing was that I didn't see that four-year-old kid staring back at me. That kid that had all these hopes and dreams. It was like she was gone. Mm. And that honestly scared me more than anything. And I made a promise to myself in that moment that even though I don't know how I was ever going to get back to the person that I was, how I was going to pick myself back up. Made a promise to myself to be there for people the way I wish somebody would have been there for me, and to see people the way I wish somebody would have seen me, to really see people. And it's a promise that honestly wakes me up every single morning. And went back to school. It was not easy. It wasn't like, oh, flip a switch and all is good. Yeah. It was 2 years that I was sort of walking alone in high school. Like I didn't have that crew of friends because, you see, what happened was is that up until that point, while I was super kind to people and loved people, I was giving to people from the wrong place. And I know that sounds very weird, but you know, how could you give from the wrong place? I was giving from a place of weakness. Mm. What that means is I wasn't giving for the right reasons. It doesn't mean that I was fake in my giving.
Yes.
But I wasn't giving from a place of strength. I was giving from a place of weakness. And what does that mean? Giving from weakness feels like sacrifice. Giving from strength comes from a place of abundance. When you give from weakness, you feel like you're giving and you feel like you're sort of losing something, or you're wondering when that giving is going to come back to you. Like you're storing it up. Maybe people give because they want to be accepted into a group, or they want somebody to like them, or they want to impress someone. No one can really tell you where your giving is coming from because it's really internal. But my giving was coming from that weak place. I had no confidence. I was trying to gain that confidence through giving. And it doesn't work that way, you know, because if you don't respect you and you don't love you, no amount of giving you give to someone is ever going to make them love you. And it's so important to know that. You can't buy people's love for you. You can only love you. When you love you and it's real, other people will fall in love with you just because you're real. But when you're not being you, it's not something that's really spoken. It's something that's more felt. But those couple of years walking through high school alone, I didn't have to give to anybody out of weakness. I wasn't trying to impress anybody. I didn't care if I was in that group or not in that group. I got a chance to do something that we oftentimes don't get a chance to do in our lifetime. And that was, I got a chance to fall in love with me for me. I got a chance to meet Orly, like to really meet her and to know who she is and to value her, not because I was cool or not cool, but just because of who I was, just because I existed.
Right.
And what I found is that, you know, I connected to myself and found, wow, you're awesome.
I think quite often that giving can be a form of hustling for worthiness, right? And
yeah,
and that's a big aha for me. Like you saying that, you sort of articulating that there are ways to give that maybe aren't going to be as connected with who you are, and it's not going to come from that same place. I just think that's such a beautiful point, and that we can really only truly give in that abundant way when our own cup is filled and when we love ourselves first, right?
100%, because when I always say, if giving feels like sacrifice, stop giving right away and turn the giving on you. Because only once you love you, and only once you're, you know, that's the concept of life vest inside. Only once you're strong within, when you have that you're strong, can you now save another person? If you're going to go and try to jump into the ocean to save somebody, but you have no way of staying afloat, you're going to drown.
Yes.
You need to have your strength. You need to have that inner strength so that you can go out there and give it to others. And it took me those 2 years until my senior year to find it. And after that, giving came from a different place, and I completely transformed into the person I always was, yeah, but was afraid to be. Mm,
That's powerful. That is so powerful. And I think, I mean, before we even talk about some of the incredible worldwide movements and projects that you've been involved in and have created and videos, I want to talk about what kind of advice you would give to a student who is in that dark place themselves. Like, what are some things that they can do or some questions they can ask themselves to really tune into who they are and to step into that with that confidence that you gained?
So the first thing I would say is it's okay to feel the way you feel. Why am I saying that? So often people try and tell us how we're supposed to feel. Don't be down. You got to be up. Let me explain. Emotion, there's a barometer of emotion, and all of them are okay to feel. It's okay to be down sometimes. Nobody, no one is always happy. And again, if they tell you that, they're just lying to you. Yeah. Everyone questions, everyone doubts, everyone has their moments. It's okay to sometimes feel that way. But here's the thing to know. Just know that the kid that you're looking at right next to you that you think is the super confident, awesome, cool kid, I promise you, I guarantee you that they have their insecurities as well. I guarantee you. I know this, not only from being a kid myself, but from being a teacher and connecting with all sorts of kids. The kid, the popular kid, has the same kind of insecurities, same amount of insecurities as the loner kid. It comes off differently, but everyone questions. Everyone. So just know you're not alone. I know. See, the thing is, the worst thing is to feel like you're the only one going through it. You're not the only one going through it. You're not. So number one, it's about getting rid of that emotion, knowing that it's okay. It's okay to feel what you feel. It's okay to question. But the greatest thing I can tell you, and the best way I can explain it, is to understand that there are no superfluous people in this world. Yeah, I always describe it as a puzzle, which I made mention to just a moment ago, but every piece of a puzzle, if you have 1,000-piece puzzle, no piece is more or less important than the other. Mm-hmm. If one piece is missing, you're not going to take that puzzle and frame it and proudly hang it on your wall. If one piece is missing, the puzzle is not complete. Bottom line, it's not complete. See, because puzzle pieces each have different shapes and different colors. They're placed in different places, but every single piece is the same size. No piece is more or less important than the other. No piece is bigger or smaller than the other. They're just different sizes, different shapes. I mean, but not different sizes. Mm-hmm. Every person is a piece of the puzzle. Every person matters and has their place. And think about it like this. No matter what I try and accomplish in my life, I'll never be able to accomplish what you can accomplish. Never. Mm. Because you are here because there's something only you can accomplish. So ask yourself this. It's about living up to your potential. Stop looking at the other guys and comparing your suitcase, what you've been given in your life, to somebody else, because you don't know what necessarily is in their suitcase. You don't know where they're supposed to go on their journey of life and what they need. All you need to do is look into your suitcase, look into the values and the skills and the assets that you have, and you have them, even if you think you don't, and ask yourself how you can use those things to advance the world. There's something that you have that you can use to make a difference in this world, to leave a mark. Mm. So let's stop comparing ourselves to others, because I know we live in a time of digital media where that's all people do. And they look on whatever it might be, whether it's Instagram or Facebook. And I'm not putting, you know, saying shame on these platforms. No, because there's a lot of good that these platforms do. Mm-hmm. But we have to realize what they are. And we have to realize that a lot of it is a facade. And just because someone's life looks perfect doesn't mean it is perfect.
Yes.
You have to, the value comes from the inside.
I love that. And I really love the analogy of the suitcase, and that we all have different tools packed in there that will serve us in life. I think it's so good. And run your own race, right? I think that's a really important piece. Would you say that's along the lines of what messages a parent and a teacher could be sending these students as well? Like, I think about from a teacher standpoint, or a mom or a dad trying to say, like, how do I help my child along if they're in this place? Would you say those are sort of—
That's a good question. Yeah. Now, I tell you this, when it's coming to a teacher and a parent, especially with a parent, because a child is less likely to listen to their parent, not because they don't love them. Okay. Because when you're a kid, okay, I remember this myself. And when I was, you know, again, I don't like to use the word bullying. I think it's a misunderstanding of what actually is happening. But when kids in my grade were sort of isolating me,
sure,
okay, and I was down about it, and my mom was telling me, Orly, it's because they're jealous of you, and they're jealous. Now, I found out later on in the years that that was actually the exact truth because, you know, a few of those girls came to me and apologized.
Huh.
But when my mom was telling it to me, I'm like, you're wrong. You're just saying that because you're my mom. It's very hard to hear the same advice from your mom. So actually the advice that a mom gives and advice that a teacher gives are going to be completely different.
Hmm.
Because, for example, when I was a teacher, I was very, very close with my students. I love my students. I treat them like they were my own siblings.
Mm.
And oftentimes parents would come to me and would even ask me, they said, Orly, can you speak to my son or to my daughter? Because they seem to hear what you're saying more. It's not because they're not listening to their parents. It's just that you hear it differently from when it's coming from your parent, only because you know you feel like they're biased. So they have to say this. So the way that what I would say a parent has to deal with it a little bit differently is, number one, you have to be real. Don't be fake with your kid. Now, what am I saying by don't be fake? You know, a child knows when you're just trying to make them feel better, when you're just trying to say something because you want to make them feel better. So you can't just say, oh, you know, you have to also give them positive encouragement. If it's not real, if you don't feel it inside, it's going to come all fake and they're going to see right through it from the start. They're going to see right through it and they're not going to connect with it. You have to know that You can't protect your child from feeling pain.
Hmm.
I know that it hurts as a parent. I'm not a parent. I can only imagine, just as a student loving my students that much. I can't imagine when a parent sees their child in pain, the immediate reaction is, I need to fix the pain.
Mm-hmm.
Understand. They need the space to feel the pain. Okay. Just like you went through pain when you were a child. That pain is part of growth. I know it sounds crazy, but you know, there's the famous story of the caterpillar,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's the caterpillar. And you know, as we know, a young boy sees this caterpillar and he sees it's trying to break out of its cocoon. And it's having such a rough time. So he feels so bad for it. And so he starts helping the caterpillar come out of its cocoon by breaking pieces of the shell. And so the butterfly emerges, and after a few seconds of flapping its wings, it falls to the ground and is dead.
Mm.
Why?
Too much rescuing. Yeah.
What the boy didn't understand is that the pain of actually coming through that cocoon was needed for that butterfly to strengthen its muscles so that when it would emerge, it would be able to fly and soar high. I'm not saying to allow your child to be in pain, but you have to know when you give them when you have to give them some space. And to allow them to know that the door is always open, very important for them to know that the door is always open and that they can come to you to be able to share with them, you know, also your experiences, to do things in a very subtle way. Because if it's going to be like, let's sit down and talk, it doesn't come through that way. When you want to bring messages, you actually have to, the best way to teach is through modeling that same behavior. Showing them that same behavior that you want to encourage within them, that sense of confidence and that sense of value and that sense of recognizing that who you are matters. Because when a child is going through a rough patch, they need to know that you believe in them. They need to know that. And they need to, but they, the most important thing is for them to believe in themselves. You can't do it for them. You need to give them the space, but to let them know that you're there when they're ready.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit of a different approach when it comes to a teacher, because with a teacher, encouraging your students is so super important, you know, especially when it comes to, let's say, even with academics. I've had students of mine who were failing. Now, when a student is failing, it does a tremendous amount to their confidence level. They feel very, very much worthless. And when they're failing, they don't like school. Well, why? Because when you're not good at something, you don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the subject you didn't like in school was the subject you were doing poorly in. You know, I mean, it just makes sense.
Yes.
And so in order to really create impact, so this student kept failing, and I would sit down with her and continue to work with her and continue. And even though she started getting 20s, she was getting 20s, and then she was getting 40s.
Mm.
It's giving her that positive encouragement. She's like, oh, I want to just give up. I keep failing. I said, no, look at what you've accomplished. Look at how far you've come. Stop looking at how far you need to go. Look at how far you've come.
Mm.
And the more that you believe in a student, the more encouragement that you give them to grow. And again, I'm not just talking about academically, okay? Because a lack of confidence can come from many different things. The more likely they are to be able to be a success. And that student at the end of the day was a 90 student. And because of that, her social skills became better. Why? Because she felt better about who she was. You know, for me as a teacher, it was also rallying the kids to see the other side. I was very close with the popular kids, and I was also very close with the loner kids.
Yes.
And so because I had that relationship, I was able to go and sit at the kids' table. Oh, do you know this girl? She's awesome. They're like, really? She's like, you don't even understand. And connecting them, being able to show one another that everybody on both spectrums has insecurities and has strengths, to be able to show how we need to see beyond the labels, because these labels are placed there from very early on. I mean, there's so many examples I can give, but definitely teachers and parents have a huge part in this, but the approach they take needs to be a bit different. A lot of it can do also with the atmosphere that you create in the classroom, the physical atmosphere in the classroom, the way that you begin your classroom's discussions. I had an act of kindness of the day that I would post on the board every day. And it came to the point where I would come into class and a student already wrote an act on the board. They loved it so much that they would take turns writing it, you know?
Yeah.
Every Friday, we had different projects that we do, art projects, where, you know, that we would do and hang up in the classroom with positive messaging. We had a wall of inspiration. You know, there's so much that you can do as a teacher that doesn't take a lot of time, that encourages empowerment. It's building confidence and empowering students to recognize their value. Everything else will go away on its own. All of the other issues will go away, because so much of the issues that exist stem from a lack of self-value and self-worth. And that's why kids turn to drugs or turn to alcohol or turn to depression, have to take medication or turn to suicide. Yes. It's this feeling of isolation.
Yes.
And loneliness.
And disconnection. I totally agree.
Yes.
And I think as teachers, we have the ability to shine a spotlight on these really inspiring things. And I'd like to sort of jump off of that before we talk. I also want to talk about how Life Fest Inside sort of evolved and emerged, but I would like to talk about your kindness cards and some of the incredible stories. Like, I think about your construction worker story, mm-hmm. how these kindness cards sort of took on a life of their own, like that whole kindness boomerang concept that you write about in your book really came to life, and how that emerged kind of when you were teaching middle school, right?
It did. The cards themselves actually began in my classroom. Again, it was based on discussions I was having with my students about empowerment and self-value, which was very much embedded into the actual lesson. It wasn't like, we're going to talk about empowerment today. No, it wasn't like that. It was embedded into the actual lessons that we were learning, and there are ways of doing that. And so I created these acts of kindness cards, each with a different act on them, simple things, you know, whether it be make someone smile or pick up the trash or say thank you to a teacher or lend somebody a pencil, whatever it is, from the smallest things to, you know, to bigger things. And on the back of the card, it had a quote about kindness, and it said, please perform the act and pass the card to someone else to keep the kindness going. Mm. And I started with these cards, you know, printing them on like colorful paper and laminating them and giving them to the students. And this was something I would give to my students, especially because I had seventh and eighth grade. When the eighth graders would graduate, before they graduated, I would write my students each a letter and left them with these acts of kindness cards. And the idea behind it was, I told them to take this card and into high school and to always look at it as a reminder that who you are matters. What do I mean by that? You see, the purpose of the card was to perform the act, right? You do the act, you hold it until the opportunity comes along, and then you give the card to somebody else. And to know that every person whose hands that card touches is because you had the courage to pass it forward. You never know how many people's lives it's going to impact. But because you had that courage to actually take action and do something, you're impacting and inspiring so many lives to show how one person can truly make a difference. You see, because kindness is a very, very broad term, and I wanted to bring it more into the practical. Mm. Because you could say, be kind, but no one that you can ask and saying, are you kind? No one's going to say, oh, no, I'm not kind. Mm-hmm. We all know kindness is important. I mean, it's understood. But when we give people practical, simple things to do, what happens is that their awareness increases. The purpose of the cards was one, to increase awareness. Those opportunities always exist, but the cards allow a person to start seeing them. It's the same thing like, for example, if a friend of yours introduced you to a song that you never ever heard before on the radio, right?
Yep.
And you hear it, you love it. And then all of a sudden, everywhere you go into supermarkets or movie theaters or in your car, that song keeps coming on.
Yes.
Like, oh my gosh, the song is following me everywhere I'm going. But it's not. The song is there. It's just that your awareness has increased and so you are drawing it to you.
Yes.
You know, that's what we are magnets and we draw to ourselves the things that we think of, the things that we put out there. So when I gave a kindness card to a student one day and it said on it, hold the door open for someone, the next day he comes into class and he starts going nuts. Orly, you don't know, it took place, the craziest thing happened to me. So what happened? He said, right after you gave me the card, everywhere I looked, there were doors that needed to be open.
Ah.
There was a door, and there was a door. And I said, you know, those doors were there. They were there always. But what you're doing is you're exercising a muscle that we oftentimes forget about.
Yeah.
And it's our eye muscle. We are exercising our eye muscle to start seeing the opportunities. Mm-hmm. And suddenly more and more of those opportunities come into fruition. And so these cards really had played a major, major impact in my classroom. And it was actually those cards that generated the concept of Life Fest Inside. It's a pretty crazy story. I was in a class with my students and it was a class we were talking about dreams. Oftentimes what I did is for my eighth grade students, I would create for them their own yearbook separate from the yearbook that they received with thoughts and dreams that they had. Because I always said to them, you know, hold on to your dreams right now because as you get older, people are gonna try and steal them from you. They're gonna not steal them like take your idea, but try and make you believe that you can't accomplish it. So we were in a class talking about accomplishing and achieving dreams, and everyone was tasked with writing down their dream. And so I had a dream also that day, and I said it out loud to that classroom. And I said, imagine, guys, if I made these cards in all different languages, and imagine if we can track the cards, and imagine all the – and suddenly this idea came into fruition, and they were so excited about it. And it was that summer that I – created thousands of these cards over a couple of days with a few of my students. And right before that, I said, oh my goodness, I came up with the concept, the name Life Fest Inside. That name came about some years before that. But it all started with the concept of a card and the idea that we can show people how the action that they do today can impact tomorrow. Mm. Because if we can do that, then a child or an adult in a moment of weakness that's feeling low and feeling down and feeling depressed and questioning their value and their worth in this world and whether they've ever made a difference, suddenly they have a way of tapping into something where they could see the impact that they've had on other people's lives. And suddenly that value comes right back to them. They understand that their value isn't dependent on money or job position or titles. It's just dependent on the fact that they are here in this world and that they exist.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think about the work that you've done with Life Vest Inside and even just the generous video that you made, it is actually one of the most asked for and requested videos in my classroom and has been for a long time. They love that video, and it doesn't matter what age they are. I often recommend it because I do professional development workshops. I often recommend it as a provocation tool for kindness inquiry because it is such a beautiful video. And I know that, I mean, talk about suitcase and your bag of skills, right? The fact that you happen to have the background in creating videos, I mean, it was so perfect that you were able to create this beautiful
it's
video.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I tell you, you know, when I graduated college, because I graduated with a major in both English and in film, and I wanted so badly to do film. My family was very against me doing film, but I wanted to do a film that would reach the world. And I remember I said to myself, I just want to do that one film that's going to reach the world, and then I'll go into teaching. Turned out that everything happened exactly the opposite. I got this crazy opportunity right after I graduated college to start, you know, teaching. I didn't even go into the schooling for teaching.
Yeah.
And it came about through the most craziest way ever. But I missed film always. I was always thinking about film. I was using my creative energies really in school through, I was directing plays for 10 years. you know, community theater. And I had this vision and this idea of creating this film, but it was 7 years since I had done film from when I had started teaching. I was so nervous.
Yeah.
And I said, I got to do this. And it was really cool to be able to take those skill sets from when I was in college and utilize them to really bring this message across, because it's all based on real life stories. Every scene in Kindness Boomerang is based on real life stories. And it's amazing to see how many children are still watching the video. You know, I answer every single comment on the YouTube video, every single comment that comes in on a daily basis. I mean, there were thousands of, when I started the organization, probably 20 out of 24 hours a day, I didn't even have a website, was spent on answering comments every single day.
Wow.
It's my favorite thing.
Yes.
And I can't tell you how many students, how many children are on the platform sharing how they've seen this in class and how it's made an impact on them. One girl actually just wrote a post this past week that she's now in sixth grade. And she said she's seen this film when she was in first grade. Her teacher showed it to her. And she was her teacher from first to fourth grade. And the film had such an impact on her throughout her entire life so far. She's in sixth grade. This is what she was writing. And she says she still, till this very day, goes and watches the film and how it's changed the way she sees people and the way that she sees herself. And that's exactly the message it's meant to come across. So I would say it's probably one of the greatest accomplishments I've ever accomplished in my life. In my life, I think that that's been the greatest accomplishment.
Wow. And I mean, it's resonated with people. It's got over 100 million views. That must have been, that must have just surpassed your biggest dream, right? I mean, that's incredible.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I knew I wanted to do something that would reach the world. I just didn't know how it would get there, but I did know why I wanted to do it. And that is a very important message for all of us out there that have dreams of accomplishing whatever it might be. Remember to know your why. The how will find its way to you. But you need to really know your why.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. How are we doing for time right now? Do you have 10 more minutes or are you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah?
Go ahead.
Okay, I do want to touch. I just think your Life Vest Inside story is so incredible. Like the airplane story. I just think how that came about is so serendipitous and just a beautiful story. I'd love to hear that before we switch to our rapid fire ending questions. Would you tell us the story?
Sure. So this took place actually in 2007. I was still a teacher at the time and it was January. I remember it was January 15th to be precise. I was going away with my family on winter vacation. And at the time there was a young girl in my community, 6 years old, who was diagnosed with leukemia. I come from a very, very, very close-knit community. I didn't know who she is. We're a very big community, but very close-knit. But everybody in the community was praying for her and sending positive thoughts. And I was doing the same. And as I was switching planes with my family to go from one plane to the next, I was listening to my voice messages. And I got the news that this young girl just passed away. And I was completely, completely devastated. I mean, I started crying instantly when I heard the news. But the reason it hit me more than anything was the first thing I thought about at that moment was my seventh grade students back at home. You see, right before winter vacation, they opened up to me about something. It was 3 years prior when they were in fourth grade that they lost a classmate of theirs to the same illness. And right before winter vacation, they started opening up to me about it for the first time and asking questions that are not exactly easy to answer. Like, why do bad things happen to good people? Why does God do certain things? Why does these bad things happen? And I just started to be able to get through to them and offer them some comfort. So I said to myself, what am I going to do when I get back? I know that they're going to hear about this. We come from the same community. How am I going to be able to explain yet again how something so devastating and so tragic happened? How? And I get onto the plane, I had tears in my eyes, and the stewardess puts me in a seat I wasn't supposed to be in, but I'm a very, very big believer that every single thing that happens, happens for a reason. And so I'm sitting down in the seat and I'm questioning, you know, God, I don't understand. How do you make order out of this chaos? How do you stay afloat in a world that sometimes seems to be pulling you downward? How? Feels like I am drowning in a sea. How? And as I ask these questions to myself, I look to my left. And right on the wall of the plane, it was a little small sign. And it said on it three words that I didn't realize at the time that would change the entire course of my life. And it said on it, Life Vest Inside. And I looked at it and I smiled. And I was tearing even more, and I realized the message, you know, what's this concept of a life vest inside? So what? What's a life vest? You see, no matter how much you push down on it, it pops back up. And so the message I took was, Orly, your life vest, your ability to stay afloat in a world that sometimes seems to be pulling you downward, it's inside of you. It's through the kindness that you give to others and through the kindness that others give to you that we keep each other afloat in a world that sometimes seems to be pulling us downward. Because let's be honest, we can't prevent the obstacles and the mishaps and the curveballs from coming our way. We can't do that. They're going to come. Things are going to come when we least expect it. But what we can do and what's in our power to do, what's in our ability to do, is to throw somebody a life vest, a lifeline of kindness, that even though they might still be surrounded by those waters, still be surrounded by those troubles, that little vest is the difference between life and death. It's what gives them the hope to know that it's going to be okay. And if you take the concept of a life vest even further, you know, what is the difference between one that allows you to stay afloat and one that will allow you to drown? There's only one difference. Air. Air. You see, the idea is, what do we do to fill up our life vest? We have to blow air into it. We have to give from the inside. And sometimes that giving could be a little, we can go out of breath a little bit. The more we breathe into that life vest, the stronger and stronger it becomes. The more that we give, the more that we empower ourselves through giving, the stronger our life vest becomes. And the stronger our life vest becomes, the stronger and more equipped we are to go and to help others. It's for that reason they tell us that if you're in a case of an emergency, you got to put your life vest on and then help the next person. Not because they don't understand kindness, but because they understand it exactly. Mm-hmm. You need to understand and recognize that your greatest asset, your greatest value is right there inside of you. That's how we keep the world afloat.
Oh, man. I have chills. Thank you for that. That's such a beautiful explanation and such a great way to end off before we jump into the three very quick questions. Is there anything you want to add before we move on?
No, thank you so much. I just really appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, man. It's my pleasure. It's been an absolute joy. What does kindness mean to you? In a few words or less.
Kindness to me means seeing the beauty in yourself so that you can help others see the beauty within themselves.
What trait or superpower should an educator lead with in order to be effective?
What superpower? Well, I want to definitely say kindness. I think even the stronger word here, the superpower is empowerment. It's your greatest tool to empower. And again, it's connected to what I think kindness means, seeing the beauty in others. So that is your greatest tool, your vision, the superpower vision to see the good.
And finally, if you were to print one quote or message onto one of those cups sold in big bookstores, what would it be?
Great one. It actually comes from Benjamin Disraeli. And it says, the greatest good you could do for another is not just to share your riches, but to reveal to him his own.
That's amazing. Orly Wahba, thank you so much for taking the time to be on Kindsight 101. It's been so incredibly inspiring. I've gotten chills several times throughout our conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. We're all amazing in our own very, very unique way.
I want to thank you for the wonderful reviews that you've left for this podcast on iTunes. Your reviews make a big difference in helping other educators find this show. If you think that I'm doing good work here and you'd like others to get inspired and join our 21-day kindness challenge and movement, I'd love it if you would take a minute, head over to iTunes and leave a review. Thank you so much. This has been another episode of Kindsight 101, the podcast. For links to resources mentioned in this episode, visit smallactbigimpact.com and click on our podcast and choose this episode number. Now, I'd love to give my audience a heads up about my new book, which will provide ideas, actionable strategies, and inquiry-based approaches to creating a kinder classroom through serving the community. Subscribe to my blog for more information. Now, I would love to hear from you. What's the biggest insight that you gain from this conversation? Head over to our website, smallactbigimpact.com, leave a comment on our podcast page, or tag and connect with us on social media with the hashtag smallactbigimpact to share your inspiring story of kindness. Can't wait to hear from you.